One, two.
Yep.
People hear me? Yeah.
Okay, so next up we're going to have Taiku Anderson and Mike McCracken are going to be talking to us about Cryo Elixir, whichever way you pronounce that thing.
Which
that
actually, stuff. According to the diagram earlier in one of the talks today, I think we should rename this to something else. OCI-LXC. When we named it, we didn't understand what we were doing. And we still don't. So anyway, I'm Tycho. This is Mike. We work at Cisco. We do stuff. One of the things I gave a talk here last year about using OCI images without the tar, all the traditional stuff, but putting other things in here. So I just want to go over this a little bit. For starters, I'm going to talk a little bit about what the OCI format looks like. So it looks like this, roughly. And this OCI layout file, you can tell that there's a version. I guess this is all not aligned again. We tried to fix this. Anyway, cool. So imagine the arrows are one up. Somehow the slides don't align. But so basically the index points to a blob, and that blob is really just a JSON blob, which itself points to a configuration, which then that configuration points to some layers. And so the layers are these gzip compressed tarballs with the file system state on them and whiteouts and all that stuff. And so this is sort of what a traditional OCI image looks like. If you're using an OCI-based runtime today, this is what you're using. And there's some drawbacks. For example, each layer is a tar file, so there's no dedupe. So for example, if you include the same file in two different layers, there's no intelligence there. The file just gets included twice. Or if you, say, modify one byte of a particular file in a container image, that in the file is a gigabyte long and you change one byte, the way that the OCI format is designed today, you include that file again verbatim, not just the one byte change, which is sort of annoying. The whiteouts are painful. It's like a specially named file, but what if you have a file in your image called .wh? Large layers are painful. You can't seek in tarballs. Actually, if you know Alexa, he wrote a large blog post about why tar is a bad format for this. So if you're trying to think about what you actually want in a container image format, you want to be able to discover image provenance. So in particular, people care about signing images. When I downloaded this, did it come from the Nginx container maintainer image? So that's important. The guy who's building the image signs it at build time, and it would be great if that signature you could then verify at runtime. Unfortunately, what happens is your container runtime downloads this tarball, unzips it, extracts it, puts the bits on the file system, and then you throw the tarball away. But the tarball was the thing that the maintainer signed. So unless you do some additional work with IMA or something, you lose that. You want to be able to update stuff. So in particular, a kind of a design annoyance is that suppose if you're a container administrator, you're running some giant Kubernetes cluster with gazillions of containers, and there's like 50 different applications, and you work for a big organization like Cisco, and there's 50 different teams, and each maintains one of those, and then all of a sudden there's a vulnerability in SSL. You, the operator, know, okay, I need to go patch SSL everywhere, you really have no way to do that. We have to go hat in hand to every dev team and say, hey, can you please rebuild an image with this new SSL? That's annoying. It would be great if you could use less space. It would be great if you could just distribute the SSL patch. You could dedupe within an image. That would be great. So basically, for the image provenance solution, what would be ideal is, since there's this whole pointer tree, if the guy just signs the index, since all this stuff is content addressed, you don't need to know any more than the signature on the index is valid. And if you're not destroying these tarballs when you extract the stuff, then you're not destroying the signature metadata, and that's useful. So for example, in these two little things here, you could use SquashFS instead of tar as just a straw man. And SquashFS, if you're familiar with it, is basically it's a mountable read-only file system. I think the kernel documentation says this. It's intended for general read-only file system use for archival use, for example, in cases where tar.gz may be used. So it's basically intended to be a drop-in replacement for this thing we're already doing. The nice thing about this is the metadata is stored separately. So for tar, the metadata is stored inline. So if you want to read a file at the end of the archive, there's nothing at the beginning that says there is 15 files in this archive and the 15th file starts here. So you have to just keep reading the whole archive, which is annoying. So SquashFS, the metadata is stored separately, which means this whole thing is seekable. You can also do parallel compression if you're familiar with like downloading large, like gigabytes and gigabytes of container images. The single-threadedness of gzip becomes very painful. So how do we implement something like this? So basically, we want to use SquashFS for the actual layer parts. And when we do instead of mounting something or extracting it and throwing the tarball away, we would just mount it directly out of the OCI image. So there's nothing's lost. With the signature on the index, we haven't destroyed that SquashFS image, so we can verify that the thing the guy built is the thing that we're running now. Also, then, one of the other goals of this was updating. So if you think about, there's a kind of a spectrum. And so on one end of the spectrum, when you get an image from your development team, it's a Docker image, say, and that is bit for bit what the development team ran and tested, which is one of the things that people really loved about Docker, because then they know exactly this is the thing you want to deploy. And on the other end of the spectrum, there's traditional application packaging, which is you say, I want SSL, and you don't specify a version at all. And maybe that version of SSL, there's some thing where it doesn't provide a symbol that this thing needs, and that's where you can get into weird dependency hell issues. And that's why people like Docker, is because they never have to solve that problem. The ops people don't ever have to solve this dependency hell for the what was the version on the developer's machine different than mine. But unfortunately, that is different than, you know, what you want out of Docker is really sort of something in the middle here, where I can change out specific versions of things if I know where they are in the layer stack, but it's not all the way back to dependency hell. Maybe, you know, you say I'm using this version of Python or whatever. And the administrator can go build his own version of Python with the single patch applied and then stick it in, and that would work. That's kind of what we want. So if we're trying to do a strategy for container updates, you might have two Docker files. They're two different applications, so they both require OpenSSL and Python. You clone one of them, you clone the other one, then you run their install scripts, and now you've generated a container. And if you're just strawmanning a different way to do this, you might do it like this. So you have two different layers that you're describing. One is we start from a CentOS and we add SSL. The other one is we start from a CentOS and we add Python. And then on this side for the application install, you might say start from CentOS, grab this SSL, grab this Python, and then install my application. And so through this way, if you propagate this stuff in the OCI metadata, then you can tell the operator, hey, we have this different way of annotating things, and we know that this particular layer corresponds to this thing. So in pictures, if you have something that looks like this, or a Python 3, I'm going to use blue for SSL and green for Python, then the end result is, if we do this apply thing, we stack the SSL on top, then we stack the Python on, then we put the diff from the install. So ultimately, this is sort of how the colors correspond. And that's the idea of, then the administrator can go in and say, I know this blue layer has a bug, I'm going to swap it in for this other layer with this one patch applied that I'm really worried about. Or you can do it with Python too, I guess is the point here.
Thank you. So Tycho mentioned some strategies for building images that allow you to more flexibly apply updates and be sort of more in the middle of that continuum of dependency hell versus everything static and I have to go back to 50 dev teams and ask them to rebuild their images when I need to fix an exploit. And, you know, that could be weeks or months. And in the meantime, I'm running a cluster that's exploitable, right? So I titled this "Let's use a container runtime." I actually mean let's use Kubernetes. Let's use a runtime system that supports this image building and mounting scheme. And so, just in a nutshell, Tycho's suggesting a layer format that uses SquashFS as the layers. And so instead of unpacking it, you mount it. That's basically it. You mount the SquashFS in subsequent overlay FS mount points, and you don't have this extract step. The extract happens as you read files from the image, just like with mounting any SquashFS. So this should fit into a container runtime really well. If I've got Kubernetes running Cryo and a Cryo compatible runtime, such as the one that we've built, Cryo LXC, that uses LXC, or RunC, the sort of more common one, we should be able to just plug in these images that we've built with SquashFS layers and ship them and use the regular OCI image management tools and do minimal changes because this is all compliant to the OCI spec. Basically, the OCI spec for container images lets you just say the blobs are any type you want, and the index points to the blobs, and we don't care what happens. In general, though, everything has been written and tested for the way that Tycho described first, where they're gzip tarballs, because that's what the original Docker format was, and that's what everybody uses. So ideally, the kubelet will talk to Cryo. Cryo, this is the red text here, is where we have to do something different. It'll pull and mount, so this might be the first time we mentioned AtomFS right here. But this is basically, if you think of a series of overlay FS mounted SquashFS file systems, if you think of that as a different kind of file system, you could call it AtomFS, and you could label each of those layers as a molecule in an atom, or an atom in a molecule, right? But Tycho just skipped straight to the implementation details of the thing that we have called AtomFS, which is fine. So the final point is Cryo LXC and or RunC, if you're using RunC. We'll just run with that, because what Cryo does, the OCI runtime spec interface, is hand me an unpacked rootFS, or really hand me a mounted rootFS. But actually, the way I just described that points to some of the bumps along the way. Is that like I mentioned, the assumptions there are a lot of assumptions in the tooling because there's only one way that people have really used this, and this is with the compressed tarballs in the layers. So for example, Scopeo is a tool for moving around and unpacking, just moving around and inspecting OCI images, both local and remote. And it assumes that it's assuming that that layers are compressed and layers should be compressed. And if you use it for, if by default you use it to ship around OCI images with uncompressed layers, it will helpfully compress them for you, which is not what you want if you're shipping SquashFS layers. Some of the tooling sometimes rejects layer types that aren't common, even though the spec says you should accept, unknown layer types. That's being worked on. This is another example. Umochi is another image management tool. Just assumes that things need to be compressed, so they try to be helpful by compressing things by default, which is not what you want. I sort of did a slip where I said the OCI runtime spec expects an unpacked rootFS, right? There's an implicit assumption of a decompressed step there, which we don't actually have with this SquashFS layer type. You're just mounting it. So there's a lot of the architecture of the Cryo project and the libraries that it's factored into, containers image and containers storage. And this is what github.com/containers/image/etc. That assumes sort of like a decompress and apply diffs step. You're going to decompress this blob, and you're going to apply its diffs to here, and then at the end you have an extracted thing. We don't need to do any of that work, and there's uh, there's a bit of friction in adding. It's, so what we're adding is not just another way of storing images because of the way that, that it assumes you have to do this. So this is something the Container Storage Library implements graph drivers. And graph drivers, terminology that started out in Docker, because the layers, if you have multiple versions of a container, or if you have multiple containers that were built off of an Ubuntu image base or a CentOS base image, there's actually a directed graph of layers. If you know there's one base, then two different things were built on top of that, et cetera, et cetera. So if you think of the layers in terms of that graph, the graph driver is the storage driver that models that graph of image layers. And so it's definitely focusing on the extract step. And so for running, you're extracting images, or for building, you know, when you're building, you have a container that was running, and you did some commands, and then you make a snapshot, and then you do some more commands, and you have a diff that you need to discover the differences between the two file systems and make your new layers. So that's the sort of the what that's referring to is the render diff. Mentioned this. So there are actually a lot of different graph drivers, all for different ways of storing images. You can use thin provisioning type file systems, regular file systems, or even just be really inefficient and do lots of copying. And all of these primitives are very extract step oriented. The interface for adding a new graph driver into Creo is, you know, you do a create, you do a delete. You apply diffs from, you know, if you get a new layer, you apply the diffs from that layer to get a new thing, and then when you get the final image for the container, that's when you actually do a mount. Everything's in terms of individual layer IDs, and it's expecting that you will be unpacking and extracting, and like Teiko mentioned, that you're doing a sort of a lossy thing where you extract the tarball, that's the thing that you signed, but what you have at the end of the process is something that you can't check the signature against. What we want to be able to do is use our new SquashFS tools SquashFS style layers in Creo. And the question is sort of how do we patch it? And the approach that we're taking now, like what you'd like to do is there a high level function that says, okay, I've got this image URL and I'm going to create a container from it, and I want to just sort of cut off there and do my special SquashFS thing. But there, it's not quite that easy. There isn't really one place to patch there. There's code that implements the process of pulling images and saving to storage. And there are some assumptions around that extract step in there, and using the graph driver primitives. And then there's a separate code that handles, this is called the runtime storage server, that handles actually getting to a place where you have a usable rootfs, and this is doing the extract and then a mount. And these are two separate things when, in fact, we're proposing something that doesn't need two steps. Right, yeah, I'm saying it grabs the image and the library downloads it, and then we also extract here and then mount. It's two steps. So we have the answer here is that we don't actually know the best way to do this now. We have an approach. We have some ideas. This is certainly something that we'd be interested in talking to people that maintain Creo and
who actually know how this code works.
For the best way to do this, because these assumptions that we talk. I don't want to say that they did it wrong or that they made bad assumptions. These were very valid assumptions until we came along and wanted to do something kind of weird with it. And so, you know, maybe there's a better way than where we're hacking it in now. Also, just to quickly introduce, since it's not entirely related to the image storage format discussions from before, but we wanted to mention that there is a drop-in replacement for RunC that uses LXC. It's just another box. I guess maybe not everyone was here for the diagram talk before. It was a couple hours ago. But if you're thinking of how So how containers get run in a Kubernetes cluster that uses Cryo is there's a format for a kubelet to talk to Cryo, and that's the CRI, container runtime interface. And then Cryo translates that, does some work and translates that to the OCI runtime interface spec, which it then passes to a compliant runtime. RunC is one of them, and we've written another one that will, instead of using the libraries that RunC uses, it uses LXC. And you may have your own reasons for wanting to use LXC. One reason it might be that you're using it in the cluster for other reasons, and you don't want to have to maintain multiple runtimes. Okay, and so now it's time for a demo that Tycho will motivate and
something like that. Anyway, so suppose this is the updating thing. So suppose that I have a image where there's some vulnerability that's known. The one I cooked up is when you run the Python web server, it forks a task that just serves up slash, so you can look at whatever you want. So anyway, we call that Python 3 rooted. So suppose you have this image and you'd really like to fix it and with some other version. And if you notice, the bottom two layers here stay the same. There's actually a bug in our tooling for generating this, why the second layer is there, that we'll see. So the bottom two layers stay the same, but the top one is fixed. And so this is the idea of the admin knows, you know, how to patch some particular thing. And this one's in the Python standard library. I just hacked the file, but you could imagine doing anything. Any bug, SSL or whatever. So if I go here, I can start. So this is going to start. I have to run all this as root because I'm not cool enough to have unprivileged containers. There it works now. Yeah, boo. So I logged some. These errors here are really not errors. This is just for debugging purposes. So for the demo, this is actually in the backwards order that I displayed it in the slides. But this is how Cryo actually thinks of it. So this is the image, the actual base rootfs. This is that empty layer, and here's the image with the bug in it. And so what I want to do is, if I do a wget. I don't even have unprivileged wget. So if I do this wget, you can see, look, my rooted image, I can grab etc issue or whatever file I want off the system. So now so if I look at this replace script, you can see here I'm doing a create of this fix.json. So what's in there? Oops. There we go. Okay. So this fix.json basically points at a fixed image. And this fixed image is the one where the administrator has massaged the layers. He doesn't need, if the administrator knows because of the OCI annotations, he doesn't need to go back to the developer. He can just say, here, I generated a fixed image. So I have this script here that does a replace, which basically just takes one, swaps out the other one. Again, these error messages, now you can see these two are the same. This is the same 7.7. This is the same empty layer here. But now I've generated this fixed one. So if I try and do my wget again, now I get a connection refused because that little bit wasn't there and it wasn't exploited. So the idea here is, with a little bit of annotation, and if we all as a community start thinking a little bit differently about how we design our images, we can make life a lot easier for operators. I don't know, with that, I think we're done. We'll take questions.
Towards the start of your talk, you had Python.